start the clock. We've increased minimum wage to $17.70. We've hired 2,000 more doctors and nurses. We're building more classrooms in schools for 100,000 students. We've brought unemployment to the lowest rate in 11 years. We've got the highest increase in wages in a decade. We've helped 1 million Kiwis pay their bills with their winter energy payment. We've boosted incomes for 384,000 families through the Families Package. We've increased school funding so parents don't have to pay school donations and NCEA fees. We've set standards for rental homes. We've extended paid parental leave. We've banned microbeads. We've boosted funding for KiwiRail. We increased New Zealand's refugee quota. We're leading on the Christchurch call to eliminate terrorist and violent extremist content online. And we're making sure New Zealand history is taught in all schools and kura. 2:56. But a great list.
She's been Prime Minister for just over 2 years, a mother for nearly just as long, and last week she passed her country's zero carbon legislation into law. Earlier this year, Jacinda Ardern received global praise for her leadership in the aftermath of the Christchurch shooting, which included introducing strict gun laws. I didn't include it in that 50-second grab from the three-minute video of her achievements. But with an election due in the next year, a recent poll had the opposition party, the Nationals, with enough support to form a coalition government. So it's going to be an interesting few years. Let's talk about the woman she is really, though. What happened in the 37 years leading up to her prime ministership? Journalist and author Michelle Duff has pieced together this story of an extraordinary leader. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you on again. How did you go about putting this book together, firstly?
Well, I mean, as we've just heard from that substantial list, she, Jacinda Ardern, has, you know, has achieved quite an amount since she's been in power, and she has actually had a big impact not only on politics, on local politics, and precipitating a change of government in just 7 weeks, but also in kind of starting conversations about gender roles and what it means to be a leader around the world. So I wanted to approach this. It's not a traditional biography because unfortunately she declined to be involved, although I did have some discussions with her office. So at that point, I decided to approach it, you know, sort of part biography, part journalism, you know, going back through her life and visiting her town, talking to some of her political opponents and her mentors and her teachers, but also kind of just including my own personal reflections and using myself as a kind of proxy for a generation of us women who have actually been really inspired by her. As a person and a leader.
And I understand for her a lot of it was about the timing of the book, given her term is not yet up, and I think the fact that she didn't want to focus on herself so much as what she's achieved. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got the sense, you know, I would not be the first person who has approached her to tell her story, and I won't be the last. So I definitely got the sense that she felt it, or her team, you know, and her felt that it was a, you know, the right political choice for her not to do any books at the moment.
Mm.
So, I guess I did what any good journalist would do and just wrote it anyway.
Hey, what was her upbringing like?
So she grew up in a small town here in the North Island called Murupara, which is a very, you know, sort of middle of nowhere place, quite low income, you know, it's known when it hits the headlines, it's for gang violence and that sort of thing. So her father was a police officer there. Her mother worked at the local school cafeteria, and she's got one sister. So she said actually in her maiden speech that one of the reasons that she felt inspired to get into politics was that she noticed from a really young age that there was a difference between the haves and the have-nots. And I suppose watching, you know, going to school with these children, some of them who didn't have lunch and had no shoes and that kind of thing, see her on that kind of path quite early, I think, to being a social democrat.
Mm. And I understand she grew up in a Mormon family as well.
Yes, she did, which is fascinating, isn't it?
Mm. And later denounced her religion and called herself agnostic because it didn't align with her, I suppose, her stance on the LGBTQI community. Is that right? That's what I was I was reading.
Yeah. Yep, so that's exactly right. So she did, and her parents are still, you know, follow the Mormon faith. But she, in her early 20s, she stood away from the church, just basically saying that she couldn't reconcile her own beliefs with that of the religion. So she has, you know, I think that the values that she would have learned, though, during that time, during her upbringing in the church, she would definitely, you know, carry those through into her politics. And she has said that in the past as well.
Mm. When did she first develop an interest in politics?
Well, I mean, she grew up in Mutapata, but she went to high school in another small town further up country in a kind of quite a farming community called Morrinsville. And she went to a co-ed public school. And at that time, she was pretty active, actually, in the local, in the school community. She was on the board of trustees as a student representative and campaigned for girls to be able to wear shorts and trousers as part of their school uniform.
Really?
So, yeah. So she was already kind of pushing, you know, she clearly had gender equality front of mind, even from quite a young age.
Mm. She describes herself as a social democrat and a progressive, and I believe she started as an MP in 2008. When did she realise she wanted to become the party's leader?
You know, I don't know that she ever really did, per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, she... I can't really overstate how much that kind of took the whole country aback, really, that happened. I mean, you know, the previous leader, Andrew Little, was polling abysmally and 7 weeks ahead of the election. And I don't think no one ever really thought that Labor stood a chance. But, you know, it was at that last poll, which I think put Labor from memory at about 24%, possibly even lower. Mm. And they just, you know, they had a conversation where he decided, and, you know, credit to him because it was the best thing to do, that that he had to stand aside and give it a shot, because really things couldn't get much worse for them at that point. And, in fact, it was, you know, the right thing to do, because, you know, she managed to take them to a place where they were able to build a coalition and win the election.
Mm. It is 23 minutes past 7 on ABC Radio Perth. My guest is journalist and author Michelle Duff. We're talking about the story of Jacinda Ardern. Michelle's book is called Jacinda Ardern, The Story Behind the Extraordinary Leader. And it's number 2 on the charts in New Zealand over there at the moment, which is great to see. Now, in 2017, history was made. She became the youngest female leader to take office. Well, what happened on that day, Michelle?
Oh, look, I mean, it's all a bit of a blur, to be honest. I had a 2-year-old at the time. So, I mean, we were driving to get takeaways, and we were listening to the radio, which was essentially, it was Winston Peters, who is the leader of the New Zealand First Party here in New Zealand. He got to choose. It was up to him, really, who he would form the government with. And so the country was just on tenterhooks. I mean, he kept everyone waiting for weeks. And then we were just listening. I think the whole country was listening to the radio to see what the outcome of that was. And, yeah, he basically said that he was going to choose, he wanted to choose change, and he wanted to choose the Jacinda Ardern-led Labor Party. So, yeah, I mean, no political pundit could have predicted what would have happened on that day.
Mm. What have Jacinda and her partner, Clark, taught us about gender roles? You touched on it earlier, and you go over this in the book. Tell us.
Look, I actually think that they've taught us more than we think. I mean, you kind of think that we live in this world where, you know, everyone's free to do what they like. And, of course, you know, men can stay at home and women can work. But in practice, you know, very few men do take parental leave. And, you know, Jacinda Ardern is the second world leader in history to have a baby while in office. So I think the fact that they are, you know, that Clark Gayford was a very, very public stay-at-home dad, and Ardern, you know, is a working mum, I think that they're really showing us that this is not only possible, but it's something that we can all, you know, and should all potentially, if we want to, be striving towards. I think for young women, it's incredibly inspirational.
Mm. You had your second child whilst writing this book. Congratulations, Michelle. Channeling a bit of Jacinda yourself because you're a working mum, and your little one's 6 weeks old, is that right?
Yes, he is.
That is amazing.
I'm quite sleep deprived.
Thank you for even coming on this morning. What do you think she has provided to women all over the world?
Oh, look, I think it's just letting us know that the possibility exists, you know, that we can all kind of be striving for more if that's what we choose. You know, she's been actually really public, you know, really forward in saying that she's in a privileged position, you know, that she is well off, that she does have support, that not everyone will be able to do what she is doing or even want to. But I think the fact that she's doing it and succeeding just kind of, you know, shows us all that gives us that extra boost, I suppose.
Mm, yeah, it does. In your book, you essentially say that this is not a love letter to the Prime Minister, although it can feel like it at times, and that her performance should be critiqued like any other. What challenges lie ahead for her?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, this book was, you know, obviously I have a huge admiration for Ardern and what she's achieved in writing this book. But I think that we need to also be able to look at her and her government and think, you know, she's only one person within a system. So what actually are they doing to make change? And are some of the things that she talked about really being born through, you know, leading with kindness and being more transparent in government and all those kinds of things? And, you know, I think there is an argument to be made that, you know, maybe we haven't been seeing as much of that as we would have hoped. And certainly in terms of what the challenges that she's facing, I mean, we have a housing crisis here in New Zealand, and unfortunately her government's housing program, Kiwi Build, has not been a success. In fact, it's been a resounding failure on all counts. So, you know, there's that. They've got to claw themselves back from that. And although, yes, they've passed the zero carbon bill, you know, there are still, you know, quite a few rumblings of discontent from farmers who have to do a lot to reduce their methane emissions and that sort of thing. And on the left as well, you know, there are a lot of people who think that she has not done enough for Indigenous rights here in New Zealand. So, yeah, I mean, you know, coming up to an election, you know, she has quite a lot to contend with, actually. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it brings.
Mm, it will indeed. This has been a robust chat. Michelle, thank you so much for giving us part of your energy. We'll let you go so you can spend the rest on your tiny little bub. The book has done really well. It's great to have you on this morning.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's journalist and author Michelle Duff. Her book is called Jacinda Ardern, The Story Behind an Extraordinary Leader.